I just got off the phone with a client that I helped buy a dental practice about 6 months ago, and I asked him, how much have you made since you bought the practice? We went and looked at a lot of his numbers, and he has made $280,000 in just 6 months. Now, assuming he does the same amount in the second half of the year, he's likely going to be making something like $560,000 this year. And he had a lot of expenses up front that were one-time expenses. He's probably not going to have those same expenses the second half of the year. He might make even more than that. When I bought my practice, I had a very similar experience. I made $200,000 my first year out of school when I worked as an associate. But when I bought a practice, I made about $700,000. Now, I also sold a practice and that I got some equity from that. So this dentist is doing better than I was doing at his practice. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I have been a practice owner myself. I now help dentists buy practices. I've worked with 40 plus dentists to buy practices in the last year, one of which we're going to talk about today because we have all the numbers. He's said I can share everything about his situation as long as I don't share his name or give away too much information on his location. He's fine with me sharing all the details. So we are going to look from the beginning, what it was like to find a practice, how much he paid, how we negotiated, what the closing process was like, and how he is now on track to make $560,000 this year. So when he first reached out to me, he already had a practice he was considering buying. He was looking at it. He got some numbers from a broker, and he honestly was a little bit confused on if it made sense for him to buy this practice. And so he gave me a call. He said, Chris, I need help evaluating this practice. Can you help me? Now, the practice had done $1 million in revenue in the previous year, and the seller had made in the previous year about $400,000. So 60% overhead, 40% profit margin. Not bad. He showed the practice to an accountant. He didn't actually hire an accountant. He was a family member that was an accountant. And the accountant said, yeah, this is a great practice. It looks like a great business opportunity. You're likely to make $400,000 next year because that's what the seller made. Literally all the accountant did was look to see how much money the seller made and just said, oh, you'll probably make that next year. That is the type of depth most accountants are going to go into if you ask them if you should buy a practice. They are just going to look at what the seller did and they're just going to say, oh, well, you'll probably be able to do that next year and that's how much you're going to make. But when I took a look at the numbers for this practice, the numbers were quite different from that. First off, the seller was out of network with the insurance companies and he was charging really, really, really high fees compared to what in-network fees were for that area. I think for a crown, he was charging about $3,000. To put that into perspective, reimbursement rates for crowns are usually less than $1,000. So this was more than three times what the average insurance company is going to reimburse for a crown. Now, keep in mind with insurance, oftentimes patients are responsible to pay something like 50% of that fee and the insurance covers the other 50% of the fee. So if a patient goes to a location where they're in network, if the crown is $1,000 and the insurance pays $500, they are going to be personally responsible for paying $500 out of pocket. On the other hand, if that same patient who could go to a dentist in network and pay $500 for that crown goes to see this seller who's out of network and charging $3,000 per crown, if their insurance has out of network benefits, we're going to assume that it does in this case. Some don't even have that. But if the insurance is still only going to pay that $500, now they have to pay $2,500 out of pocket because the crown cost $3,000. We are talking patients that are paying a $2,000 premium out of pocket in order to see this dentist when they could go right across the street to another dentist and pay only $500. Sure, if you're the owner of this business, that is a great deal for you. However, the only reason that the seller is able to command those types of fees is because he has been in this location for 30 years. He has established relationships with these patients. The patients want to come and see him. They want to come see the hygienist. They're familiar with this office. They're familiar with the dentist himself and they trust him. Maybe they're family friends. They've, 30 years, their parents might've gone there. Their grandparents might've gone to see this dentist and they're just, that's where they go. They're willing to pay a little bit extra because they feel comfortable with this dentist. If you as a buyer come in and try to take over for this seller, you're not going to be able to command that type of goodwill with the patients. You are not going to be able to charge those types of fees most likely as the seller was charging. So if you as a buyer come into an office that has these inflated out-of-network fee-for-service fees, you are going to have a very difficult time commanding those types of numbers. So one of two things is going to happen. Either number one, you're going to keep the fees as they are and a lot of patients are going to leave because they could see you or they could see the guy across the street. They don't know either of you. Their dentist has retired. He's gone. And so they can see this new guy here or this new guy over there. and the new guy over there cost $2,000 less for a crown. But a large percentage of them are just going to leave and go across the street. The other option is you go in network, which is fine. I think most dentists, especially starting out, should be in network with the insurance companies. If you buy a practice that's already in network and you're going to maintain that type of production, you're paying for a practice based upon fee schedules at that level. But if you buy this practice that was doing $1 million that year with those inflated fee schedules and you go in network with insurance companies, now you're seeing the same patients, but you are receiving 1/3 the revenue for a crown that the seller was receiving. Your revenue is going to go down. Now, across the board, all of the fees were not 3 times as much, but most likely they were something like double what the in-network fees would have been. So you might go into a practice that was doing $1 million. If you maintain the production of the seller, you might only be doing $500,000. And in this practice, overhead was 60%. So there were $600,000 in expenses. If you come in with a practice that has $600,000 of expenses and only generate $500,000 in revenue, well, you just made negative $100,000 working at this practice. You spent all this energy to buy a practice. You thought you were gonna be making a lot of money, and it turns out you're gonna lose money if you buy this practice. Now, in real life, hopefully you're gonna adapt a little bit on the fly. You might have to let some employees go. You might have to increase your treatment planning. You might have to do some marketing, get new patients in. I don't think the buyer would have lost $100,000 if he bought this practice, but I really think he would have struggled. He probably would have ended up making less than he would have made if he just stayed at his associate job. And so that's what I told him. I said, hey, this practice, it looked like it was a great practice for the seller, but for you, I don't think this is the right option. I think we should keep looking. The other thing to keep in mind is that the seller was doing a ton of specialty procedures. He was doing all sorts of implants. He was doing molar endo. He had a very low number of patients and he was generating a lot of money per patient, about $3,000 per active patient. The average dentist is able to do about 1,000 per active patient. The reason he was able to do that is because of his high fees and because he was doing a lot of specialty procedures. He was doing a lot of cosmetic work, veneers. I went and looked at his website and he had all these certifications and he pioneered some new dental technology in like the 80s. This guy had been around for a long time. He had a ton of experience. He was able to produce a lot per patient. He was able to command those high fees because of his credentials. And no offense, but you coming in do not have those type of credentials, you're probably not going to be able to produce $3,000 per patient. When I evaluate practices, I look at the buyer's expected revenue and the buyer's expected net income, not the seller's past revenue and past income. And I usually calculate it on 3 different scales. Worst case scenario, average scenario, and above average scenario. And so you can get an idea. Hey, if I underproduce a little bit at this practice, I'm still making $400,000 this year. That's a great practice to buy. Maybe middle is about 500 and top is 600 or 700. And so that's a great practice. But if you find a practice where, wow, if I underproduce here, I'm going to lose money. If my average is about $100,000 and high end is $200,000, then what are you doing buying a practice like that? Because even on the high end, if you work super hard and execute everything perfectly, you're only going to make $200,000 the first year that you own this practice. Just stay at your associate job if you're going to do that. Wait it out and find a better practice. Because I have found practices with clients where worst case scenario, they're making $400,000, maybe $500,000. Middle case is 6 to 7. And optimal case, they might be making $1 million or more. These types of practices exist. They are out there, and just you need to spend a little bit more time looking to find a practice like this. It's going to take more work to find a practice like this because when you first reach out to practice brokers, they're going to show you the practices that no one else wanted to buy. The first practices you look at are not going to be the ones worth buying. When clients reach out to me, the first 4 to 5 practices they send me are usually not worth buying. It's usually a few months in, they get an email from a practice broker out of the blue with a really interesting practice, you know, one that's potentially going to be very profitable. And when you receive an email or a phone call or find a listing that just came to market, you have to move fast on those because the best practices sometimes sell within 7, maybe 14 days, sometimes even less than that. Sometimes a few days they're on the market and someone makes an offer to the seller and the practice is no longer for sale. Some practices will get 5 or 6 offers too. And the seller has the option to choose which offer they want to go forward with. Do not trust what an accountant says, at least when it comes to determining if a dental practice is worth buying. When you're doing your taxes, absolutely you should trust your accountant. But for evaluating a dental practice, do not trust an accountant, especially an accountant that doesn't have dental practice transition experience, because they're just going to look at the seller's numbers and they're going to say, well, you'll probably be able to replicate this. And they'll put a projection. Well, if you grow the practice 10% per year, this is what you'll... That's nonsense. It's not reality. It's built on wishes and assumptions. If you really want to determine if a practice is worth buying, you need to look at the actual clinical numbers and determine what you as the buyer are going to be able to produce at this practice. So once we had looked at this first practice and we decided it was not worth pursuing, at least not right now, you know, I never say just ignore a practice. I say just put it on the side. Let's look at some other options and see if we can find something better. I ask him, how many practice brokers have you reached out to so far? He told me, well, I reached out to a practice broker, one practice broker. He had only talked to a single practice broker. Now remember, brokers for dental practices are not like realtors for houses. With a realtor, they are happy to show you every single practice on the market because they have a system to where there's a buyer's representative, a seller's representative. They split the commission so the buyer's representative can show you any house on the market because they know they're going to receive a commission. With dental practices, the practice broker is usually receiving around a 10% commission on that sale, and they only receive the commission if it's a practice that they personally have listed on the market. So they have zero incentive to show you any other practices that are on the market. They are only going to show you the ones they have listed. So you as a buyer, if you want to see every practice on the market, you have to reach out to every practice broker that's in your area. Usually they are going to be at least 10. Go to Google, search. If you reach out to me, I have a master list. I'm happy to share with you some brokers. You just need to find every broker in your area, reach out to every single one of them and see what practices they have listed for sale. So he expanded his outreach. He reached out to about 10 different brokers. And within a few weeks, he had found 5 additional practices that were on the market. He thought there was only this one, but he found 5 more just by reaching out to brokers. We evaluated those practices one by one. Honestly, none of them were great. The buyer at this point, he was getting kind of antsy. He was like, Chris, we've already looked at 6 practices. I don't know if we're going to find a good one. Maybe I should just settle for one of the ones we already looked at. And I said, hey, you've really only been looking for less than a month now. Let's give it a few more weeks, if not a few more months, and just see what we can find. So I didn't hear back from him for 2 or 3 months. Well, no, I mean, I heard from him a few times within those months, but there wasn't really any serious action for 2 to 3 months. But about 3 months into the search process, I received an email. Hey, Chris, I just received this practice from a broker and it's 5 minutes from my house. It looks really good. Can you take a look at it? Sure enough, I took a look. Revenue the previous year was $1.4 million. The seller's net income was $600,000. The patient mix 70% PPO, 30% cash. So easy to replicate. There were 2 full-time hygienists at this practice. The number of active patients we calculated to be almost 2,000 active patients, which is a great number. It's a very good number. We ran the projections for how much he was likely to make. On the low end, it was about $350 in a year. On the high end, it was about $800 in the year. And average scenario was about $500,000, which is great. I mean, he was making like $250 at his associate job. So average case scenario, he's going to double his income. Worst case scenario, he's still making more than he made at his associate job. And best case scenario, he's just about tripled what he made at his associate job. After you find a practice you're interested in buying, the next step is submitting a letter of intent. That's the official offer that you're going to make to the seller saying, I want to purchase this practice. And you're going to outline the conditions under which you're going to purchase the practice. This is also where you outline how much you're willing to pay for this practice. Now, the listing price of this practice was $1 million. The real estate was listed at $600,000. So in total, $1.6 million for the practice and the real estate. If you have the option to buy the real estate, it's usually worth it. You might as well if you can afford it. Now, with a practice, you usually don't have to have a down payment. You just have to have an emergency fund saved up, usually at least $50,000, sometimes a little bit more. But when you buy real estate, they're generally going to want you to have 15 to 20% of a down payment for the real estate portion. So in this case, you would need 15 to 20% of $600,000 if you want to buy the real estate. And the client I was working with, luckily he had that saved up. So he was able to buy the real estate as well as the practice. Because he was buying the practice and the real estate, we were able to negotiate down the purchase price and the practice a little bit. And he ended up going with $845,000 for the purchase price. I was very happy to see that the seller was willing to go for that, especially because this practice was new to the market. Oftentimes, these types of practices that are new to the market, the sellers are less willing to negotiate on prices. But, you know, We were able to negotiate it down. Great. Now, we set the timeline for closing to 2 months. That's average. I've seen some practices close within a month, sometimes 3 months. We set 2 months on the LOI. Usually on the LOI, you're going to set an expected closing date. Sometimes you overshoot that a little bit, but you try to be as close as possible in the LOI. Now that the LOI is signed, the next step was reaching out to banks to get financing to buy the practice. He had something like $250,000 saved up, which is great, but it's not enough to outright buy a $1.5 million practice and real estate purchase. So obviously we had to reach out to some banks. The initial offers we got back from the banks were around 6% interest, and we were able to negotiate between a few different banks and get that rate down almost to 5%, which at the time was great. You might not think negotiating the rate down by 1% is that big of a deal. I'm just going to run a quick calculator here. With a $1.5 million loan over 15 years, total interest paid is $600,000. If you go down 10 years, it's $400,000. We'll switch that to a 5% rate just to compare. For the 15, it goes down to about $500,000. And for the 10-year, it goes down to $327,000. So depending on if you go with the 10-year or the 15-year loan, negotiating that interest rate down is going to save you between $70,000 and $100,000. And it's not that hard to do. A lot of people just don't do it. They just reach out to one bank and they say, okay, that's fine. I recently talked to someone who got a loan for like 1.5% higher than the market average at the time. They didn't compare any other banks. They just went with the first one they talked to. Please, if you need help with this, reach out to me. My fee is so low in comparison to how much money you can potentially save just by doing things right. Let's say you get a 6.5% interest rate, which, like I said, I talked to someone who had an interest rate that was 1.5% higher than the market average at the time. Over 15 years, you're paying almost $700,000 in interest. Now, I recommend a 10-year. So let's go to 10-year and let's go to 5. We're down to 327. If this dentist doesn't refinance, he's potentially going to be paying something like $350,000 over the next 15 years that he doesn't have to pay if he just found a lower interest rate and did the 10-year instead of the 15-year. Please, if you've never bought a dental practice before, do not do this yourself. There is so much money to be saved just by making these decisions right. If you do not understand what you're doing, do not do this alone. It is not worth it. So the next step is hiring a lawyer. I recommend reaching out to a lawyer who has dental experience, potentially a lawyer that only works with dentists. I have worked with clients who have used dental-specific lawyers, and I've worked with clients who have used non-dental-specific lawyers, lawyers that just do all sorts of stuff, maybe someone in their local town. And I have had some really, really bad experiences with the lawyers that do not have dental experience. Buying a dental practice is such a unique transaction. It's not really like anything else. A lawyer might say, oh yeah, I deal with businesses all the time. Deal with businesses? What does that even mean? There are so many types of businesses and they all function and behave completely differently. Don't just hire any old attorney because they have dealt with businesses before, okay? The closing process ended up going pretty smoothly. Now, there are a lot of different things that I'm not going to cover right now that need to happen. There's about 100 steps that need to take place after signing the LOI before closing. I have a list and we go through it together and we work on all the individual steps that need to take place before closing. It's going to be hard. It's going to be confusing. It's going to be a lot of work. 6 months in, he's already made more money than he made at his associate job. The first 6 months are going to be stressful. Sure. I did end up working with him. Some clients end up hiring me after closing in order to help them with post-closing support through the transition. That's something I did with this client, and we were able to find ways to really grow his business and make sure that we set up some systems so that he had a lot less stress than otherwise he would have. No practice is going to be perfect. There were some issues, some pretty glaring issues. There were some issues with staff. He had to let some people go right away, and he had to hire some new people because they weren't the proper fit for the practice he was at. He had some issues with insurance that he had to deal with. He had to make some pretty big changes and actually do some construction work in the building, chairs and some equipment that had to be replaced. You know, it was old and it wasn't working right, and he just had to buy some new stuff. That's why I said he had some upfront expenses that he likely is not going to have in the second half. And so he potentially is going to be making even more in the second half of this year. I ask clients all the time, was it worth it? And about a month in, sometimes the answer is, I don't know. This was pretty stressful. I don't know if it was worth it. 2 or 3 months in, they're like, yeah, I think it was worth it. 6 months in, okay, he's already made more than he made at his associate job. He's getting a lot more comfortable. I ask him, was it worth it? He said, yeah, it was absolutely worth it. I'm making so much more. I've got so much more freedom. He was working 5 days a week at his associate job. And some days he was there till like 6:30 in the evening. He's only working 4 days here. And some days he leaves early. Some days he leaves at noon. That's just what he chooses to do. If he doesn't have a full schedule, he moves his patients forward. He told me the other day he got off at noon and he went and played golf. Great. It was like a Tuesday. He was playing golf at 1 o'clock. And, you know, he's making more money than he made at his associate job. He has a lot more freedom, a lot more control. He's happy. If you are considering buying a practice, I think it's a great idea. You absolutely should become a practice owner if you are a dentist. The only thing is, remember, the first office that he sent me, the one that we first looked at, he would not have been making this type of money 6 months in if he had bought that practice. He probably would not have had time to leave work early and go golfing on a Tuesday or a Wednesday at that practice. He probably would have been there stressing out, making less than he was making at his associate job, at least for the first few years until he grew the business. If you buy the right practice, it's going to make your life so much easier. There's so much room to where you can make mistakes. If your projected net income is $600,000 and you screw things completely up and you only make $400,000, well, you still just made $400,000. But if you buy a practice with less wiggle room where your projected income is $200,000, you screw it up and make nothing, you're really going to wish you had bought a different practice.